Hello and welcome to a summer edition of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler, joined by Matt, and we're going to talk about the big news out of Davidson later in this pod. But we're going to kick things off with a little bit of NBA draft discussion. This year, the most fascinating for the A-10 going into the draft, outside, of course, of Obi Toppin's lottery pick year. But there are a lot of A-10 players who could potentially get taken or even just end up as an undrafted free agent in training camp. And so joining us today to help us suss out some of those possibilities is Matt Moderno of the Bullets Forever blog and the Believe in Wizards podcast. Matt, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be talking A-10 basketball with you again, Tyler. Good to be here. Matt, looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, so you wrote some articles on Bullets Forever earlier this year, and I believe you did a little bit of podcast work on it as well, on both Jordan Hall and Hyungjoon Lee and what they could potentially end up as NBA players. And you did this specifically because the Wizards are sitting at number 54 in the draft. And if either of these guys get taken, it's going to be somewhere in those last 15 picks of the draft. So we'll kick things off with Hyungjoon Lee, because I personally just think he has a far more optimistic NBA future than Hall. What do you see for him? Is that a guy that you would consider if you were making that pick?
So there's a really good website for anybody that's not familiar called Rookie Scale. They put together a consensus mock draft, and it's basically an averaging of where all these guys end up across sort of the major big boards, mock drafts, all that stuff. And they kind of tend to stick to the more reputable ones. So it's actual like valuable intel. And they have Lee at 79th on average, kind of across the big boards for people. So if that's a reasonable reflection of where teams are actually, you know, thinking, it seems probably pretty unlikely that he gets drafted and is probably more looking at a two-way. I think as a catch-and-shoot guy, obviously, you know, he can shoot the ball, right? So I think it's a question of, can he shoot on movement? Can he defend well enough to take advantage of that shooting? I'm still not totally there on the defense. So if you're going to be a one-dimensional player in the NBA, you probably have to be elite on one side of the, you know, on that side of the ball. And I don't know if he's quite that good. I actually thought he would shoot better this year than he really ended up doing. So I'm still, the jury's still a little out for me, I'd say.
Yeah, for me, I think that the defense is going to take a little bit of time to develop. Sure. But one of the key things for looking at a prospect, I think, is can this guy hang around in a playoff game? Mm-hmm. And certainly if Hyungjoon Lee becomes a good to even above average defender, he looks like an NBA player. I'm not 100% sure what position he plays in the league, probably a little bit of both the two and the three. But I think right now he could at least do something along the lines of what Furkan Korkmaz gave the Sixers this year, where he's just a cooker off the bench. You go to him for 10 minutes one night if your offense is stale. And if things are humming, maybe you don't play him for 2-3 games in a row. But I could see that as his floor. If he continues to grow as a shooter and as a scorer, there's always a place for athletic, very smart, which he is, scorers. So hopefully he figures out the defense. But if I were a team, I'd at least want to get him into training camp.
Yeah, I mean, I think teams always want shooting, right? And you hope you can kind of figure out the rest if you can keep coaching him up and it's positioning and he looks better around other better defenders, then maybe he kind of pops a little bit more. So I definitely think he's worth a shot if, you know, selfishly as a Wizards fan, if he were on the summer league team or something like that, I'd be very happy with that.
I'd also be curious what you guys think. You know, you pointed out his shooting numbers weren't maybe quite as good as we hoped this year, but I think part of that has to do with Davidson not having Kelvin Grady around last year. So we really did have to become that primary option for Davidson. And I think Tyler and I talked about this quite a bit, where when teams would throw their best defender on Lee and really up the pressure against him, that's where he didn't have his big scoring game. So I'd have to imagine in the NBA, he would have much more of a secondary role. Do you think that's something that teams could just look for more as more of a catch and shoot guy as opposed to someone that creates?
Yeah, I had a conversation with some other, like, I don't know, other draft enthusiasts recently about, like, well, he's not that great a shooter off movement. Well, yeah, that's obviously nice if you can do that. But I think to your point, like, the majority of what somebody's going to want him to do is sit there wide open and hit open shots. And I got to think he can do that at a pretty reasonable clip.
All right, so we'll carry it on to Jordan Hall. You listed him recently as one of five potential backup point guard options for the Wizards at that back end second round pick. And we've talked about it so many times on this pod. The numbers are great. 14 points a game, 6.7 rebounds, 5.8 assists. But to us, just watching those games, it felt like so much of that came when things were in blowout mode. He was a great garbage time stat guy. And even though the stats were wonderful, it felt like he was never impacting the game as much as he should have. So to you, in your chances to see some Hall, do you think that that might be a symptom of a bad St. Joe's team? Or is this guy just getting overhyped because he's 6'9 and he can pass?
Is yes a reasonable answer? And we'll just say a little bit of both there. I think he's one of those guys where, yeah, the team was bad. And could some of those numbers have been even better on a better team, like the assist numbers, potentially? Or would the scoring have been lower? I don't know. When you're 6'9 and you don't really get to the rim and or finish around the rim particularly well, I think that's probably a bad sign. But, you know, I just watched the team for the last year and a half, basically, where both backup point guards were about 6 feet tall. And the notion of having a big guard like that, you know, if he can just kind of reasonably distribute, you know, get a rebound, grab and go. He's a better shooter, I think, than people realize, at least like a catch and shoot guy. He's actually like pretty solid. So I think if you have like a drastically lesser expectation of what he brings to you and he doesn't have to be the star of a team, you know, I think he still brings some really good things. When you and I watched him play that A10 tournament game, I was very unimpressed seeing him in person for the first time. He just looked like kind of another guy. He took a lot of bad shots. So I think there'd have to be some situation where teams like really spend a lot of time with him being like, hey, you're not the primary offensive guy. Are you okay, you know, just facilitating for others and hitting wide open shots when you get looks at them? And if the answers to those things are believable, yes, then I think there's a place for him in the league. But I certainly wouldn't be, you know, bending over backwards to take him in the 40s or something like that. And that same consensus mock has him at 64. So again, he's kind of a crapshoot guy to go in the back half of the second round, I'd say.
Yeah, and just one perspective I would give for people who don't follow the draft. Basically, I'd say that anyone who's in the consensus top 90 is going to have a chance to show up somewhere on the back end of the draft. Typically, you don't really see guys anywhere past that number, but when you go 45 to 90, it's basically just going to be a random 15 out of that 45.
It's team's preference, and then a lot of times, some of the better guys from that list actually don't get drafted because they'd prefer to go undrafted and kind of pick their spot as a two-way guy. You see some undrafted guys that get better deals than some of the second round, you know, the guys that go 55 or something like that. So it's a great point.
Yeah, and something that I think people don't really realize if you don't follow the draft too, for a little perspective. Number one, we joked about it before we went on this show. Teams will sometimes just sell their picks at the end of the second round. Yeah. Your Wizards are very often a culprit of that. They've had a history of just sending off their picks for $1.5 million, $2 million. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a lot of backroom dealings that you'll see in the final picks where teams are calling guys trying to see what they'll agree to. Yep. A lot of times you'll see a team that doesn't have roster space, so they'll end up just taking some random guy playing in like the Turkish league or over in Serbia so that they can just stash him for a year. Sometimes it's only a guy who will take a minimum two-way deal, someone who's only willing to sign a training camp deal. So once you get to that point, it gets kind of random.
And like you said, anybody kind of after 45 is not really getting a guaranteed deal for the most part anyway. You see some of the second round picks that teams don't have to give them a guaranteed deal, but if they go 33 or basically a first round pick at that point, you know, they're looking at a multi-year deal where they're kind of locked into a salary. If you're Jordan Hall and you go 57th, you know, you're probably looking at sort of like a two-way contract or something like that, which is still not a bad place to be.
Yeah, at this point, top 40 should get you at least one full year guaranteed. And then beyond that, it's typically 2 to 4-ish guys on just random teams where sometimes you end up in the right situation with a team who really values getting you on that long-term deal in exchange for some guaranteed money. Mm-hmm. So with this Wizards pick at 54, let's say that they have to add an A-10 guy to their roster here. It can be Hall, it can be Lee, Vince Williams, Jacob Gilliard, or I'll throw in a little monkey wrench here. They can just go down to the G League and add Jordan Hall in a call-up this summer instead.
You mean Jordan Goodwin?
Jordan Goodwin, yeah, whatever. Which one of those five would you most want to have on Washington right now?
I actually was kind of sleeping on Vince Williams going into that A-10 tournament, and I obviously only got to see him play once, but I came away pretty impressed and went back and watched a lot more VCU games than I expected to. And I honestly don't understand why this isn't a guy that's kind of getting more love in that second round territory. He's got good size, good wingspan, shoots at a reasonable clip, good facilitator. Maybe not like as good a defender as the reputation suggests as like an individual defender, but seems to be able to fit into a team concept. So I would be very okay with them, you know, taking him with their second round pick. I also really like Jordan Goodwin. He's been on our podcast a couple times, so I'm a little biased, but he's a good dude. He's a super athlete and he wants to come in and be like a pesky 94 foot defender for them. And that's something that they could certainly use. So I would happily take either of kind of those two options.
Yeah. And Vince Williams is a really interesting case. I wonder if he just gets screwed by being older because people love to overthink that. But meanwhile, when it's the 50,
he's also not as old as I expected. Sorry to interrupt you. He won't even be 22 on draft night. He's still 21.
Oh yeah.
Which is, you know, everybody's like, oh, he's a multi-year guy. He's a senior. He's so old, but he came in relatively young. And I think that's actually like, it should be something that gets him a little more of a favorable look, I would hope.
Well, you look at draft boards and it's all these overtime elite guys who are like 18 and 8/10 of a year old going around there. People just don't like 21-year-olds. But in reality, when it's the end of the second round, you're going to have this guy for probably 4 years max, even if he is good. Because if he outperforms his draft slot, you might not want to pay him. Mm-hmm. So if I'm picking at 55, I want a guy who's going to contribute now. And Vince Williams is kind of the perfect archetype of a take a shot, second round pick, 3-and-D guy. The shooting was a little inconsistent. As you said, the defensive scheme probably helped him out a little bit, but if he's a good coach, I don't see how he can't be like someone's 9th or 10th man, just help you out when injuries set in. I don't think he'll be a star, or probably even a starter for that matter, but someone who could certainly just be a good third wing off the bench.
I'd be curious because you guys have definitely seen a lot more of him over the last several years than I have, but the passing like really impressed me. I think he gets like he does a lot more creation than, if you look up anybody's scouting report for him, it doesn't say like tertiary creator or whatever, but it seemed like he set people up pretty well.
Something that kind of came in later, like a lot more this season. We saw it a tiny bit his junior year, but his first 2 years, he was basically useless offensively.
Well, and something he had to do because VCU's offense was pretty terrible, losing Bones Highland, and they didn't have Ace Baldwin for a while. So he really needed to do that. And that, I think his ability to help his teammates out kept VCU alive early in the season and then helped him flourish into a first team player once we got to conference season. So that definitely think that is a skill he's improved on. Yeah. So I guess keeping it in the A-10, there are a few guys not in the draft this year, but likely will be next year. So I'm curious, is there anyone out of someone like Yuri Collins of St. Louis, Tyler Burton from Richmond, or even Deron Holmes from Dayton, who's going to be a sophomore next year, any one of those guys that has maybe caught your eye when you were at the A-10 tournament or just watching the season in general that you think might have an NBA future?
Yeah, Holmes is the guy, I think, of that list. Just what he does, NBA teams are going to want. Like a big dude who can run the floor. Hopefully he can shoot it a little bit from the perimeter longer term here. I think he'll protect the rim in a reasonable clip. Obviously young. I'd be all in on him. I think I saw like probably 8 to 10 Richmond games this year, and they must have been like Burton's worst games of the year. I kind of didn't get it. He just disappears for like really long stretches. So
yes, he does.
I didn't love him, but if he came out and like looked like the man this year with some of those guys gone, you know, maybe he kind of turned that opinion around a little bit.
So my last question for you in terms of the A-10 specifically, and I'll link this with the two guys that we haven't talked about so far, Jacob Gilliard this year and Yuri Collins next year. Mm-hmm. Both small guards, not prolific scorers. Basically, if you're going to be under 6 foot and be a good NBA player, you got to be someone who puts the ball in the basket or is just an incredible, incredible passer. Isaiah Thomas, Aaron Brooks, John Lucas III, basically probably the best examples of the last decade or so. Until this year, and until this April specifically, when we saw Jose Alvarado come out at the beginning of the playoffs for the Pelicans and prove to be an insane irritant, a guy who was legitimately pissing off Chris Paul in huge playoff games and causing him a lot of problems. Him and Jacob Gilliard are very, very similar players. Alvarado's a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, but Gilliard's a better offensive player. And Collins is basically just kind of Alvarado, but a slightly better passer, a little bit worse defender. So now that you've seen what Alvarado could do in that series specifically, do you think these guys might actually have a place in the NBA? Because I was skeptical that Gilliard would ever make the league in February. And now at this point, I really feel like there's a chance.
This guy I really like, kind of more likely to go in like the top 20-ish range, and Tennessee's Kennedy Chandler. And he's another 6-foot guard. He's actually bigger than Gilliard, but still small by NBA, you know, perspective. But he's a really good athlete, really long wingspan. Was kind of a ball hawk this year, shot a better percentage. You just have to be so good at everything else to account for the fact that you're small. And I don't know if Gilliard is good enough, you know, in those sort of other respects to like make up for the fact that he's, I don't know, was he 5'8"? I mean, I'm not sure what like his actual real height would be versus what they list him at. So to me,
I've actually stood next to him. He's about an inch shorter than me, and I'm right around 5'11". So I'd say the listed 5'9" is probably accurate.
Okay, that's fair then. I mean, any little bit helps at that point. You can sell a guy on he's 5'9", and we'll say he's 5'11" in shoes is a lot easier than, you know, he's really 5'7" or something like that. But he's a guy that I think could maybe find himself on a two-way or on a G League team and be really successful at the G League level. And then, you know, we saw a ton of call-ups this year. Obviously, some of it was COVID-related, but could he kind of work himself into a couple 10-day contracts or something like that? It wouldn't shock me. I just don't see him being able to do that like long-term and latch onto an NBA roster or get a guaranteed contract or something like that. But it'd be cool to see because he's a fun guy to watch and he seems to work pretty hard.
Well, we'll see, because I think we would have said the same about Alvarado next year. And basically at this point, all you're fighting for is a chance. We saw that with Jordan Goodwin last year. He got a little mini call-up and that should hopefully serve him well next season. So you get a try, maybe you end up like Alvarado, maybe you're one of the many guys who gets shot back to the G League. But
yeah, and Collins is another one that if he has a really good year upcoming and that team's successful, which I actually like that roster a lot, so I think they'll probably be pretty good. So he's somebody that could maybe kind of inch his way into that draft range, I would think too.
All right, so we'll close this out here. Everybody's just busy with their Jaden Ivey, Shaedon Sharpe discussions. It's boring now. What people aren't talking about is the second round, and that's what we have tried to cover here today. So let's forget about the Wizards at 54. Maybe they move up. Maybe they make some sort of trade. Or maybe you just want to get some projections on the record here. Every season we're going to see 2 to probably 7 guys in the second round who have a real impact on the league. Sometimes once a year, you're going to get maybe not a Draymond Green, but at least like a Herb Jones, Malcolm Brogdon level guy that is going to make a serious impact in a playoff series. So give me a few guys in the second round here. I'll give you some different categories that you feel like will be successful in this draft. So number one, a high ceiling guy who maybe flames out completely, but if he hits, will be a quality starter.
Ooh, okay. That's a tough one. I think Ryan Rollins out of Toledo is an interesting one. He's really shifty combo guard. I think the passing is probably better than people realize, but second year player can really score it. Great from the mid range. 3-point shooting wasn't great. That's probably the swing skill for him. If you're 6'3" and not like a crazy, crazy athlete, you probably have to shoot from three at a pretty high clip. So he's got good touch. Floater looks good. Free throw shooting is good. So I think he'll inevitably do that, but if he were like a microwave scorer off the bench in the NBA for the next decade, it wouldn't really surprise me, or even kind of a fringe starter if the playmaking comes around. I wouldn't be shocked by that at all either. And then another one I think I would probably go with is He's kind of like right around first round range. This Christian Coloco, the center from Arizona. He's 22, so that hurts him a little bit. He's 7 feet tall. He blocks pretty much everything within 10 feet of him. And he actually has like a good looking jump shot, even though he didn't do much shooting at all for his Arizona career. So those are two guys that I like that are, you know, if they kind of come out right, could be starters in the NBA someday.
All right. So how about a deep sleeper, somebody that you feel like is probably not going to get drafted, but you would love to see get picked up on a two-way?
I like Aminu Muhammad at Georgetown. Like a couple years ago, there was a conversation about Lu Dort while he was at Arizona State. And he was this freshman and he was like 6'4", and he was really strong and physical. And he just kind of bowling balled into people, but he didn't shoot it well enough. What is he in the NBA? And so he went undrafted, and ultimately, actually he went in the second round, I think. But another guy that just like really got slept on, even though he was like extremely productive as a freshman, and that's Muhammad. Like, I don't really know what he does well other than just like play really hard and somehow like make plays. So the first time I got to see him in person, Georgetown played Syracuse. And I'm like, hey, this guy's pretty good. He's like a 6'4" power forward basically. But at the end of the night, he had 21 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 blocks, 2 steals. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, if you're just good at basketball, I think that should count at a certain point. And the other one I think I would throw out is John Butler Jr. out of Florida State. He's basically like a 7-foot guard. He's like a, you know, poor man's KD archetype, but he's like 170 pounds soaking wet. So who knows if he'll ever, you know, bulk up enough to turn into anything, but he's definitely interesting. If you could have a backup shooting guard that's 7 feet tall and can also protect the rim, I think that's pretty intriguing to at least, you know, give a try. And if he gets drafted, it's probably, you know, in that second half of the second round kind of range.
All right. And then we'll close it out with this. If you just take out basically like the top 30 to 35 guys, who would you say is the most likely player in this draft to just simply be good? Like, it's 10 years from now, you are betting that this player will be a rotation guy for a decent team, because we get one of those every year.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of – he's probably flirting right around the range you're talking about here, but Andrew Nembhard, the Gonzaga point guard, I think, like, consensus mock and stuff has him, like, in the 30s, so might be cheating a little bit, but he's a 6'4", 6'5", solid point guard, really smart, can facilitate, knows when to get the ball to other people, but also can like score well enough to kind of keep people honest. So I think the way the NBA is trending, if you just have like a really good big backup point guard, I think he can kind of last for a pretty long time.
Yeah. He's among my two favorites for this. It's him and Jalen Williams from Arkansas. And we'll see every year there's a guy where Nembhard fits the exact profile of this. He's an older player. He is really good at a lot of things. He is not spectacular at anything that NBA teams would consider to be like sexy. He's not a great scorer, but he's a good passer. He's a solid defender. And those are the guys that always end up hitting at the top of the second round. You're going to get one older player who is really good. You think like Ayo Dosunmu from last year. All he was just the third guard for the Bulls. And he may never be a starter in this league, but he is going to be a good backup point guard for the next 10 to 12 years. And if you get that in the second round, that is a huge win.
Yeah, for sure. I take that. The other one I kind of like is Justin Lewis, power forward, small forward, power forward out of Marquette. It's like 6'7", bulldozes people, can shoot it a little bit, rebounds really well. I think he's long and pretty athletic, so he'll probably defend at a reasonable level. So he's just another guy, I think, probably in that 35 range that could stick around for a long time.
Yeah, another interesting one there. So, Matt, thank you for joining us. Where can everybody get your great draft takes as we head into things on Thursday?
I appreciate you guys for having me. Looking to get a little more into the A-10 scene this year. I had a lot of fun talking basketball with you specifically during the tournament, so hopefully get more opportunities to do that this year. Podcast is Believe in Wizards. It's on the Believe Podcast Network, so it's B-L-E-A-V. During the season, I host that with former Wizard Larry Hughes. He's kind of taken the summer off to...
And Slew Billiken.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Another A-10 grad, and his son will be on the Billikens this year. He's actually a walk-on, even though he's like a good three-and-a-half-star recruit. So keep an eye out for him, A-10 fans.
All right, and then before we let you go, it's 54. The Wizards are on the clock. You're making the pick. Who are you taking?
I'll be honest, I would be really happy with Vince Williams. I'm like not pandering here. I think he's kind of exactly what they could use. And they need like cheap contributors to come in this year and like actually play right away. So the fact that he is a little more mature and a little older, I think makes him like kind of like the ideal guy to target in that position.
All right. I've been thinking Hyungjoon Lee on the back end of the first round, but maybe the answer is Vince Williams. Matt Moderno, thank you for joining us. Everyone, go check out the podcast. Check him out on Twitter for his draft takes. All right, we had some shocking news last weekend, what everyone expected to simply be a press conference announcing that Steph Curry was getting his jersey retired, which it was like an hour into it when everyone was still just in shock and really not paying attention anymore. Bob McKillop announcing he's retiring as Davidson's head coach, his son Matt taking over the reins. Not surprising at all that this happened the way that it did, that he just quietly went out in the middle of the offseason. I personally just thought it would be another like 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, I think when it happens so suddenly, it catches you off guard. Really reminded me of the Roy Williams retirement from North Carolina, where someone's just been there forever and, you know, there's no buildup to it, no retirement tour like some people have. And all of a sudden, that's
doing
it.
That, though.
No, he wasn't, but I still am in favor of retirement tours, I will say. I think Bob McKillop deserved one, but that's a take that most people will not agree with, so we don't need to go further into that.
I could have seen, at the most, him just announcing at like the end of February in his retirement tour just being basically a senior night game for himself, but it was never going longer than that for McKillop.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So I guess what also just surprises me is if this would have happened, I would have expected within a couple weeks after the season and not, you know, we're at the end of June. And I think Davidson's roster is pretty much set. So it's not like this is the type of thing that hurts recruiting. And I would assume Matt McKillop's also going to be familiar with all the new guys joining the team. But still, I just think the timing definitely caught me a little bit off guard.
Yeah, it's weird that they put together a full roster, and I wonder if there were conversations had with Reed Bailey or Connor Coquera that were basically along the lines of McKillop might not be there the rest of their tenure. I'm sure that they weren't telling these recruits, hey, he might be out in 2 months before you ever even play for him. But he's a classy guy. I would assume that there's some sort of conversation had that, hey, this is not a promise he was going to be there their whole career. The fact that no one basically panicked and dropped out of their scholarship, nobody left this roster. It seems like these guys are content to go play for Matt McKillop. No one publicly made a fuss about this. And I would assume that Matt's probably the driving force on a lot of these recruiting visits at this point anyway. Do we really think Bob McKillop was going into people's living rooms in Iceland at this point? I think he's probably kind of finishing the job when they go on their campus tour, but I would figure it's probably his staff doing 99% of the on the road work now.
Yeah, that's probably right. So Matt McKillop has been on the Davidson bench for 14 years. So it's not like he's unfamiliar with how the program operates, but clearly we don't really know what. I would assume his coaching philosophies are going to be similar to his dad, but in the immediate future for Davidson, just talking next year, does this do anything to your expectations for the team?
It does for me, trying to read between the lines. I've loved this team all offseason because I'm still just a huge Foster Lawyer fan, and we've talked about it multiple times that we think Menenga's the breakout star of the season. I liked the rest of this roster to the point that I was probably putting these guys in my top four, despite the fact that there are probably two or three more teams better than them talent-wise. I just thought that the combination of the pieces they had with McKillop would be good enough for them to make a sneaky run. Now I kind of wonder if McKillop just didn't feel like this was a big-time roster. He still never won a tournament game without Steph Curry, and if he was looking at this team feeling like that was the group that was going to break that run, I think he probably stays. Now, maybe he has some health issue that we don't know about. The man's 71. You probably should be retiring from your job when you're 71 anyway. But I don't know. It's really weird. That's the part that affects this for me. I'm not sure we can say for certain yet how many wins different it is going from Bob McKillop to Matt McKillop. It's still Bob McKillop's roster. So maybe it's only a 1 or 2 win drop off this year. Maybe it's nothing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We can't really make any big conclusions now, but I do think you have a good point that if this truly was a Davidson team that could repeat as A-10 champions, it would be hard for anybody, even if you're 71, to just walk away from that. But I still think Davidson's going to be pretty good next year. I don't really see them as a contender anymore, where before I thought they had a chance to repeat, or, you know, I would have probably had them as a solid top 4 team also. Now I'm not quite as sure about that, but it's still going to be an experienced roster. They're bringing back 2 potential all conference players in addition to some good new guys. So not like it's time for Davidson to hit the panic button or anything like that, but there are going to be some changes, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And I want to close with this because I saw people speculating that this was a Bob Knight. What was his son's name? Pat or Chris? I don't even know at this point.
Yeah.
Where he just quits Texas Tech midseason, make sure his son gets the job. Matt McKillop was getting this job no matter when it happened, because when you have the greatest coach in your school history leave, you don't go outside the program. You bring in somebody who has deep, deep ties. And the fact that he's been the head assistant for over a decade on this team means that anything short of Steph Curry picking up his finals MVP trophy and announcing on the parade that he was going into coaching, Matt McKillop was the most qualified person connected to the Davidson program at this point. Like, unless you got some superstar ex-player here, he was your best call. And he was getting this job, whether it happened in the middle of the summer, whether it happened with a full year in advance retirement tour. Like, North Carolina hired Hubert Davis. Duke hired John Shire. Syracuse will probably hire Mike Hopkins when Boeheim's corpse finally leaves in 15 years. Although Mike Hopkins might be too old at that point. But the point is, you just keep it in-house. And if this guy's name was Matt Johnson and he had the exact same resume, he was getting this job.
I think so. And it's also an easier pill when Bob McKillop just went out a conference champion. Like, it would have been different, I think, if Davidson had 3 or 4 losing seasons in a row. Like, if he had taken the Phil Martelli path at the end of his head coaching career, maybe it would have been a little bit more difficult to keep it in-house. But the fact that Davidson has been a quality team their entire tenure in the A-10, it makes it the easy decision.
And by the way, I assume Bob McKillop takes on some sort of godfather of the program role.
Is he keeping his office in the arena?
I'm not sure he needs to. He lives across the street. We're going to be watching on USA. It's going to be a Saturday at 2 in the afternoon. And when they start doing those annoying, let's zoom in on the coach 18 times during the second half, they're just going to be crowd shots of Bob McKillop. Like, he's going to be sitting somewhere in like the second or third row for the entirety of the season. I would imagine he won't miss a game.
Yeah, I think you're right. Although I will say this, like, when you say that, you turn on USA. It would never happen, but I would love to get Bob McKillop in the booth calling A-10 games. I feel like he would be perfect, but I'm sure he just wants to enjoy his retirement right now.
I'm sure he does, but I really hope we get the Bob McKillop storyteller phase here soon.
That would be unreal. He needs an A-10 podcast.
He really does. I would listen to him instead of us if he had one.
Well, there's a lot of people I'd listen instead of us, but that doesn't mean you guys should.
None of the people I'd listen to instead of us have a podcast. So until Bob McKillop gets behind the mic, we're the best you people have.
I guess so. All right. Well, another off-season podcast. Any final thoughts before our next podcast that'll probably be several weeks from now?
Yeah, TBT's coming up. We're recording this. The bracket reveal is tomorrow as of this recording. So by the time you hear this, it'll probably already be out. We know the Red Scare is in. I'm really hopeful that our pals over at the Brown and White get in once again. And we'll see what happens. As always, we'll be covering TBT. Seems like the rosters movement has died down. So hopefully now we can just focus on getting you all some great guests through the summer. All right. And thank you all for listening to this episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. Thank you to Matt Moderno for joining us to talk about the draft. Thank you for the McKillops for giving us basically the only way we could have a fun team-specific story at this point in the summer. If you've enjoyed the pod, please go on, give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us some comments and reviews on there. And everybody go enjoy the draft. More importantly, go enjoy Summer League, because I think we're going to get a lot of A-10 guys who are worth watching playing meaningful minutes throughout those few weeks. And if you haven't enjoyed it before, Summer League is just a great time. Just games on for like 12 hours a day in the middle of July. So there will be guys worth watching that we all know and love.